translation by Srila Prabhupada, Sri Acharya Purandar, the ninth branch, was a constant associate of Lord Chaitanya. The Lord accepted him as his father. Purport by His Divine Grace Srila Prabhupada. It is described in the Chaitanya Bhagavat that whenever Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu visited the house of Raghava Pandit, he also visited Purandar Acharya immediately upon receiving an invitation. Purandar Acharya is to be considered most fortunate because the Lord used to greet him by addressing him as his father and embracing him in great love. So this is a wonderful series of verses describing the different aspects of this tree of Lord Chaitanya. This analogy of a tree has been developed during this chapter and also in the previous chapter, and it is a wonderful means to explain the mission of Lord Chaitanya. Obviously, we all visualize trees as being strong, sturdy, producing fruits, flowers, having extensive root systems. So the author Krishna Das Kaviraj has taken each one of these aspects of a tree and used it to explain Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's activities and his present and future mission for everyone in the world. So it was described in the previous chapter that this tree consists of a very solid trunk, and that trunk is considered Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. This is the tree of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. The roots of this tree are nine particular sannyasis, headed by Paramananda Puri. And then the twigs and the branches, they all fork from two main branches, the branch of Lord Nityananda and the branch of Advaita Acharya. And then this chapter goes on to vividly describe each one of the numerous sub-branches, twigs, each of which represents a particular devotee, a particular prominent devotee in the Leela of the Lord. Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was lamenting in the previous chapter that this task of distributing these fruits of this tree of love of Godhead is so extensive that how can I possibly complete it on my own? So he mentions that it is therefore the instruction for every single person that they should take to this wonderful job of distributing these fruits, which are produced profusely by this tree, but also to eat the fruits themselves. So if the first one seems a little difficult, then the second part should be more palatable. After all, who doesn't like eating some berries off the tree, some sweet fruit, some strawberries? This is actually the nature of this mission, that we taste the nectar of Krishna consciousness ourselves, and then we distribute it profusely to others. Without one, the other cannot actually be said to happen in full completeness. If we don't actually have a very clear idea what it is that we are distributing, we won't be able to convey the required enthusiasm and experience and ecstasy that should naturally accompany the preaching mission. So Prabhupada referred to this point in a number of situations. He was constantly trying to encourage the devotees to become very strong in their Krishna consciousness, to read his books, and of course to distribute them. Because he said, you must read the books. If you just distribute them, well, that won't have the full impact. It is far more important for someone to read the books solidly and on the basis of that deep realization of Krishna consciousness to attract many, many, many thousands of conditioned souls to Krishna consciousness. So that is the whole spirit of our mission. And so this tree of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu includes numerous devotees, and some of them are mentioned here. But the author does give us a little caution in that although certain devotees are mentioned, I think perhaps 50 to 100 devotees are mentioned in this chapter and the previous chapter, he explains that we shouldn't try to put them in a hierarchy, that this devotee is more important or this devotee is less important. There is a clear warning given against that by the author. The understanding is that whichever insignificant twig or branch or leaf or fruit that a devotee happens to be in this tree of Lord Chaitanya, as far as the Lord is concerned, they are all equally important. And a tree does not consist simply of the trunk and the roots. It does naturally consist of each and every one of the leaves, twigs, branches, fruits. And a tree is always considered a most merciful living entity. While Lord Chaitanya was meditating on this idea of the tree of devotional service, he was also thinking that yes, I have to become this tree myself. It is no good just referring to this tree of Krishna Prem. I am actually the tree. So therefore this analogy, it does crop up again and again in a whole series of instructions that Lord Chaitanya gave to Rupa Goswami and Sanatana Goswami. He refers to the task of a gardener nurturing a particular shrub. Initially the seed is planted and then the shrub grows, the little seedling comes out. But at that stage it is very, very vulnerable. So the Lord explains that it is important that that is surrounded with proper fortification, proper protection. And so if you wander down the manor driveway, you will probably see at certain times of the year, the gardeners, they put these big tubes around the base of new trees that are planted. So that is the physical protection that's supplied. But similarly, our creeper of bhakti, which is just very fresh and very tender, that also needs to be carefully protected. And that protection comes in various ways. We have our principles, and we have, most importantly, the shelter of the devotees. Those two things constitute our key protective factors. So then this tree grows, it becomes stronger, it blooms, it produces flowers, it produces fruits, and those are fruits of love of Godhead. So while each living entity's progress in Krishna consciousness can be compared to the growth of this tree, that is one particular analogy. Another analogy that is given is the one we're covering today, that the tree itself can be seen to depict the entire collection of devotees, the entire Vaishnava Sangha. We are all unified by our strong dependence on the roots identified by Lord Chaitanya and by Lord Chaitanya himself, who is, in one of these interesting and non-different ways, he is the trunk, the roots, the branches, the twigs, and the leaves also. Because we are actually the parts and parcels of the Lord. So that, of course, means that we are of the same quality as the Lord. And although our quantity may be quite small, a leaf is not the same in quantity as the trunk, for instance, we are still nevertheless very, very important. And the Lord considers each and every devotee to be very dear. There is a wonderful series of instructions given by Narad Muni to the Prachetas in the fourth canto. And the tree crops up again there. Yatha taror mula nishechanena tripyanti tat skanda bujopashaka pranopaharachcha yatendriyanam tateva sarvarharam achyuteja. Just as offering water to the roots of the tree satisfies the branches, twigs, leaves and everything else, and just as offering food to the stomach enlivens the senses, the mind, the limbs, so similarly worshipping the Supreme Personality of Godhead with devotion, in devotional service, automatically satisfies all the demigods who are parts and parcels of him. So this is a very important analogy again, given by Narad Muni, the foremost of the devotees of the Lord, we can say. Thanks to Narad Muni's wonderful adventures, we hear so much in the Bhagavatam. Many of the descriptions are due to Narad Muni explaining to Yudhishthira Maharaj Narad Muni's personal progress in becoming a devotee from his initial position as a maidservant. And so he conveys to us some of these essential secrets of devotional service. And one of them is that it is not actually practical for us to try to worship and please everything in this world. In one sense, the entire creation of the Lord's is nothing but the Lord himself. But it is impractical and impossible for us to worship every single item of that creation. So therefore, some of us will choose different aspects of that creation to worship. There are different clubs, different groups of people who worship nature. These days, there's no shortage of different societies that people form to worship whatever they want to. So there are a lot of nature lovers, and some of them form collections of systems to actually worship nature directly. But of course, we know nature is the dear maidservant of the Lord, Mother Nature, material nature. So we are trying to worship actually something which is more fundamentally at the root. So given the impracticality of worshipping every single leaf, every single twig, every single powerful living entity, every single demigod, the recommendation from Narad Muni is that we should devote our entire wholehearted energies to worshipping the root of the entire sustenance. And that is, of course, Krishna, Lord Chaitanya. One of Lord Chaitanya's names is Vishvambar, which means the maintainer of this universe. And in that role of maintaining the universe, well, everything rests upon him. Isn't there a verse in the Gita? Everything rests upon me, just as pearls are strung upon a thread. So Krishna has to be really understood to be that foundational existence. And once that is clarified, then we also have very clear focus on what to do. Otherwise we're lost, we're here and there. We're wandering between the Vedic injunctions, which go from which of the different books of the Vedas you may pick up. Each one has different recommendations relating to specific desires, goals that one person has. But as Krishna explains to Arjuna, rise above these. The Vedas deal mainly with the subject of the three modes of nature. Rise above them and render direct devotional service. This is the focus that will actually sustain us throughout our lives. Because as it's said here, we want to please everyone. A Vaishnava is naturally looking for the welfare of every single living entity. It's not that now that we are tasting this fruit of love of Godhead, this wonderfully nectarian activities in devotional service, that we close ourselves off and we look at others and think, oh, how unfortunate they are, and carry on. No, we a Vaishnav exhibits compassion in all stages of life, and they also want the welfare of every single person. So when a person who wants this goes about this in the most effective way, their sole job becomes to bring Krishna to these people. Because if they also start watering the roots, then they will also experience great nectar, great satisfaction, great bliss. And as Narad Muni explains, that one's birth, whatever it may be, whatever one's birth may be, whatever one's occupation, whatever one's status in life, whatever the level of respect one gets as they move around their daily existence, that is all to be considered perfect when that person uses those facilities in the service of the Lord. So in Krishna consciousness, that is everyone's birthright, you can say, in one sense. But it is not automatic that a person will be able to act in that birthright. That is why our entire process of sadhana, training, association with devotees is so essential. Because through that we actually uncover what is our mission. The mission is, as described here by Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, and throughout the Bhagavad Gita, and throughout the Srimad Bhagavatam, and throughout the numerous Vedic texts that we are so fortunate to have access to. There is more information about the spiritual world here and our conduct in the material world than probably we can fully grasp in a lifetime. It will probably take several lifetimes. And then there are so many elaborations, so many explanations, so many purports on these by Srila Prabhupada and by his disciples and by others, that there is really enough to keep us busy. Sometimes we wonder as we go through these descriptions, why are we hearing about yet another list of names? A list of people, Purandara Acharya, Gangadas Pandit. I mean, why do I need to know? What does it matter? This is history, isn't it? Just like at school we hear about Henry VIII or the Tudors and the Stuarts and Alexander the Great and so many others. Okay, history lesson, nice, but what's the point of it? Well, it's very important because it actually, first of all, allows us to access and contact those great acharyas who are important members of this tree. Our entire progress in Krishna consciousness comes from receiving the mercy of elevated and advanced devotees. And the first step is to contemplate them, is to think about them, to remember their pastimes. So, just as in here there were approximately 50 to 100 different devotees mentioned, the Bhagavatam also extensively includes genealogies, descriptions of lineages, descriptions of the different Kshatriya lines, descriptions of the Brahmana lines. There is an entire section in the fourth canto called the Daughters of Manu. We hear about Akuti, Devahuti, Prasuti, the different offspring they produced, and then how those went on to multiply, and quite a lot of description is given. There is several chapters dedicated to this history lesson. But there is something amazing, because in each one of these lineages that is described, something amazing happens. Either a great saintly person takes birth, and they enact pastimes which are for the welfare of everyone, or the Supreme Lord directly takes birth, either by empowering that person through a Shaktiyavesh potency, or through actually acting wonderfully through that devotee in some way. This whole idea, when we immerse ourselves in the thoughts of the devotees of the Lord, gives us an escape from the day-to-day mundane meditations that we carry around. It is not that the idea of thinking of devotees, thinking of people, is only a strange concept for devotees. Actually, no, this whole business, this whole phenomenon of showbiz, is all based upon what this person did, what she did, who was she seen with last time, what did they do on the beach, who has she married now, what is he doing, where have they jetted off to. Newspapers, magazines are full of this. And ultimately the result of meditating on these is, the result is we develop a similar consciousness or a similar aspiration to those that we hear and read about. Ultimately, the aspiration cannot be any more than immersing ourselves increasingly in the sea of sense gratification. That is the subject matter for people in general in the world. That is the katha that they engage in. And we all like katha. That's why these magazines are so popular. That is why chat shows are so popular. That is why a huge amount of content goes out on TV. Because if people weren't interested in it, they wouldn't be producing it. So this applies to practically everyone. We naturally want to know what devotees are doing. Well, we naturally want to know what people are doing. But this type of gossip can be transcendentalized. If we try to gossip about Krishna, if we try to gossip about the devotees of the Lord, then we will actually start to pick up some of the consciousness of those devotees and those great personalities. Here there are such elaborate descriptions given. You have individuals like Acharya Purandar, who is such an exalted person that the Supreme Lord, the trunk, the roots, the sustenance of everything, worships him as a father. Lord Chaitanya would also give this same treatment to Advaita Acharya, who was very unhappy with this. But this is the Lord's pastime. He will take any one of his dear leaves and twigs and put them in a particular role where he can then interact with them so that he and the leaves and the twigs can obtain maximum benefit, maximum joy, maximum bliss. So this is what happens when we dovetail our attention or our propensity to gossip, to find out, to experience, when we dovetail all of those in the vast treasure house of the devotees of the Lord. Bhaktisiddhanta Maharaj mentioned that there is enough adventure going on in the spiritual world that it could fill bookshelves and bookshelves of books. We may be impressed by some of the grand libraries of the world, They may hold a few million volumes. The different reserve libraries that exist in different places. Millions of volumes of knowledge, wisdom, some speculation are held on those bookshelves. And we can be impressed. But there are thousands and thousands of times more books that can be written about the pastimes of the Lord. Because the pastimes are ever expanding and they are completely real. So we obtain great benefit when we actually look at those real pastimes. Now, looking at some of the pastimes described here, in particular, following on from yesterday's class, in yesterday's class there's a description of Damayanti, who is the sister of Raghava Pandit. And she actually is a confidential maidservant of Krishna. Her name is Dhanishta Gopi, Prabhupada says. And she would always try to make wonderful foodstuffs for the Lord, wonderful tasty preparations for the pleasure of Krishna. So in Mahaprabhu's Leela, she comes as Damayanti, and with the instruction of Raghava Pandit, she engages herself in making all kinds of tasty preparations. Prabhupada says here that these preparations would be carried by Raghava Pandit in bags, jali, Raghava jali. And these bags have become famous. What an interesting concept. These bags are becoming famous. Simply because they carried something that was offered to the Lord and the Lord enjoyed. So any small insignificant item of paraphernalia even is a source of great treasure for devotees. Is great treasure for the devotees. When different items of maha are given out from the altar sometimes, or some maha from some senior devotee, immediately the devotees are clamoring to get something. Could be a little piece of cloth, could be some a flower, could be the maha garland after the abhishek. Each and every small item that has somehow come into contact with the Lord or was somehow used to serve the Lord becomes worshipable. So this is not so much a very rigid, scholarly, philosophically driven mission alone. It is not that we understand the philosophy of the Lord and that itself satisfies us. No, for a very simple, pure-hearted, humble person, they will view anything and everything compared to the Lord as a direct object of worship, which will lead to their direct advancement. Sometimes we have a tendency to diminish rituals, diminish the importance of rituals or processes, and instead focus on the goal. But that sometimes can only be used if there has been a history of misusing a ritual or missing the goal entirely. Once the goal is firmly established, that the goal is to render devotional service to Krishna, a very natural, emotional, happy situation takes place by engaging in the rituals, the details, the objects with great care and attention. So this is exemplified here, where different items were carefully looked after by the devotees of the Lord. So Prabhupada says here, a vivid description of this Raghavera Jali is to be found in chapter 10 of the Antya Leela portion of Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita. So when Damayanti would cook these foods, they were carried by Raghava Pandit. And the incident in the Antya Leela is when all the devotees from Bengal went to Puri. And they engaged in different pastimes with Mahaprabhu, starting with a special water pastime. But I thought I would, as Prabhupada has referred to it here, the description of the Raghavera Jali, I thought I'd read what was inside those bags. And that could inspire us as we head towards Sunday and the various Sunday feasts that will no doubt appear. So this is during the visit to Puri. Raghava Pandit came with bags full of food prepared very nicely by his sister Damayanti. Damayanti made varieties of unparalleled food, just suitable for Lord Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu to eat. The Lord ate it continually for 1 year. These are the names of some of the pickles and condiments in the bags of Raghava Pandit. Amra Kashandi, Ada Kashandi, Jhala Kashandi, Nembu Ada, Amra Koli, Amshi, Amakhanda, Tailamra, Amasatta, With great attention, Damayanti also made dried bitter vegetables into a powder. Who likes bitter vegetables? Sounds austere, doesn't it? Do not neglect Sukuta, because it is a bitter preparation. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu derived more happiness from eating this Sukuta than from drinking Panchamrit, a preparation of milk, sugar, ghee, honey and yogurt. Since Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, he extracts the purpose from everything. He accepted Damayanti's affection for him, and therefore he derived great pleasure even from the dried bitter leaves of Sukuta and from Kashandi, a sour condiment. Because of her natural love for Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, Damayanti considered the Lord an ordinary human being. Therefore she thought that he would become sick by overeating, and there would be mucus within his abdomen. This is an interesting concept, and it is a special privilege of those who are advanced in devotional service. The general instruction for everyone, especially against a backdrop of such misbehavior by different groups, is that we should always have great worship, respect, awe and venerance for the Lord, veneration for the Lord. That is actually the foundational start of devotional service. That we first of all understand who the Lord is. That He is the trunk, the roots of all sustenance. He is not just some cowherd boy playing around, causing mischief. If we start with that conception, we form the incorrect understanding of Krishna. Which is why the Bhagavatam also goes through an entire 9-canto introduction into who Krishna is, into His tattva. Yet then, in the 10th canto and beyond, we start to get hints of the types of emotions exhibited by Damayanti. She thinks that the Lord is an ordinary human being. And she thinks that He would become sick by overeating. Well, we find the same thoughts in Mother Yashoda's mind. She cannot see beyond the fact that here is Krishna, He is my child. That's all I know Him as, just my child. Well, that is a special privilege given by the Lord. It is not that anyone can just assume that. When the Lord decides that someone's devotional service is of such caliber that He wants them to be very close to Him, He will put them in whichever position He wants. Because of sincere affection, she thought that eating this Sukuta would cure the Lord's disease. Considering these affectionate thoughts of Damayanti, the Lord was very pleased. A dear lover strung a garland and placed it on the shoulder of his beloved in the presence of her co-wives. She had raised breasts and was very beautiful. Yet although the garland was tainted with mud, she did not reject it, for its value lay not in material things, but in love. Damayanti powdered coriander and anise seeds and cooked them with sugar and made them into sweetmeats in the shape of small balls. Now, I don't know if Mother Sachi Mata is there in the kitchen. She may be making some of these items. But the description continues. And all of these items were carried in bags by Raghava Pandit. She made sweetmeat balls with dried ginger to remove mucus caused by too much bile. She put all these preparations separately into small cloth bags. She made 100 varieties of condiments and pickles. She also made Koli Shunti, Koli Churana, Koli Khanda, and many other preparations. How many should I name? She made many sweetmeats in the shape of balls. Some were made with powdered coconut, and others looked as white as the water of the Ganges. In this way, she made many varieties of long-lasting sugar confections. I'm sure the nutritionists and the health advisors are probably squirming by now. But these are the very items of ecstasy for devotees. She made long-lasting cheese, many varieties of sweetmeats with milk and cream, and many other varied preparations, such as Amrit Karpura. She made flat rice from fine, unboiled shali paddy and filled a large bag made of new cloth. She made some of the flat rice into puffed rice, fried it in ghee, cooked it in sugar juice, mixed it in some camphor, and rolled it into balls. She powdered fried grains of fine rice, moistened the powder with ghee, and cooked it in a solution of sugar. Then she added camphor, black pepper, cloves, cardamom, and other spices, and rolled the mixture into balls that were very palatable and aromatic. She took parched rice from the fine paddy, fried it in ghee, cooked it in a sugar solution, mixed in some camphor, and thus made a preparation called ukra or mukri. Another variety of sweet was made with fused peas that were powdered, fried in ghee, and then cooked in sugar juice. Camphor was added, and then the mixture was rolled into balls. I could not mention the names of all these wonderful eatables, even in a lifetime. Damayanti made hundreds and thousands of varieties. Damayanti made all these preparations following the order of her brother Raghava Pandit. Both of them had unlimited affection for Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and were advanced in devotional service. Damayanti took earth from the Ganges, dried it, powdered it, strained it through a fine cloth, mixed in aromatic ingredients and rolled it into small balls. The condiments and similar items were put into thin earthen pots and everything else was put into small cloth bags. From small bags, Damayanti made bags that were twice as large. Then with great attention, she filled all the large ones with the small ones. She then wrapped and sealed each and every bag with great attention. The bags were carried by three bearers, one after another. This is how many items she produced. It took three strong men to carry all these bags. Thus I have briefly described the bags that have become famous as Raghavera Jali. The superintendent for all those bags was Makara Dvajakara, who kept them with great attention like his very life. Thus all the Vaishnavas from Bengal went to Jagannath Puri. So this is the whole adventure that takes place. Mahaprabhu engaged in so many different adventures, so many wonderful pastimes. And during each one of those, the devotees were in mixtures of ecstasy and lamentation. Ecstasy when they were with him, or about to see him, or looking forward to him, and lamentation as soon as he would drop a hint that he was about to leave, or drop a hint that his mission had changed, or that he should go somewhere else. But just to meditate on the sheer level of detail given here, it might inspire some of us to maybe arrange a nice festival where all these preparations are made. And then, well, there's no limit to what kind of festivals could take place. Raghava Pandit, Damayanti are, of course, both very key participants in the Chidadai Utsav festival. It took place in their home area, Banihati. And we get an idea what unlimited options there are for us to do something, to taste this nectar, and to distribute it to others. Unlimited options. If you happen to be an expert cook like Damayanti, well, there's so much that the Lord can eat. And whatever you supply the Lord won't actually be enough for the Lord. He can easily eat that and a lot more. And so many others are there. The whole of the CC is full of all different skills, abilities, pastime potencies possessed by the devotees. Each one of them manifests those potencies and the Lord derives great pleasure. So a few individuals are mentioned. This was Damayanti and Raghava Pandit. And I thought maybe I could just speak a little on Pandit Gangadas, who was also mentioned here in text 29. It's described that he was the eighth dear branch of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And one who remembers his activities attains freedom from all bondage. Now that's quite a wonderful benediction. By simply meditating on an exalted personality, we get the Shruti Phal, the result of hearing. And in this case, it's freedom from all bondage. Well, technically as devotees, everyone is already freed from bondage. Because their connection is to Krishna, they are now bound to Krishna. So there is no room left to be bound to anything else. But until that relationship is fully manifest and those knots are fully established, the knots that tie us to Krishna, other types of things may come along to bind us. And definitely our previous habits, tendencies are still there to some extent. They are being slowly unraveled, because when Krishna's knot is there, there's no space for any other knots. But it takes some time for those to unravel fully. So if we are attaining, looking to attain freedom from all bondage, then the adventures of Pandit Gangadas would be very nice to hear. So Pandit Gangadas was, he was born in Radhadesh. Now Radhadesh is not the same as Radhadesh. It's a technical difference here. Radha means dry. And it specifically refers to the place where the Ganges does not flow. So this referred to an area of Bengal where Ekachakra village is. And this is where the Nityananda side of the associates of the Lord, many of them took their birth and appeared in those places. So Pandit Gangadas was originally from there. He was from there. And he became the Lord's teacher. After his initial studies, his father took him to see Gangadas Pandit and said, "Here is my son, I'm giving him to you. Please teach him everything nicely." Gangadas Pandit was a very learned and elevated Vaishnava, because it is not that Lord Chaitanya's father would just hand over Lord Chaitanya to anyone. He was a carefully vetted teacher, if you like. And it is said that Gangadas Pandit was the same person as Vasishtha Muni from Lord Ram's Leela. You remember Vasishtha Muni came and asked for Lord Ram, and Dashrath Maharaj was not very happy, not very pleased at all, because he didn't want to give up his son. But there was a whole... Oh no, that was Vishwamitra. Vasishtha Muni was also involved in instructing. So the personality is the same. But yes, that particular pastime is with Vishwamitra Muni, how he came and wanted the two brothers to come and help protect. So the Lord assumes the role of a student. And Pandit Gangadas became his teacher from the age of 8. Now, as a student, of course, Lord Chaitanya was unrivaled. Nimai of Nadia, he would argue with everyone. Vishwambar, he would defeat everyone. He would produce elaborate arguments where he would defeat his own arguments. And then when the students started to agree with this new line of argument, he would defeat that again, leaving them completely bewildered. He would pick a fight, so to say, with anyone and anyone who claimed to know something about Sanskrit and Sanskrit grammar. And in this way, he was famous as a very great scholar. In that system, in the Vedic system, you would have the teacher and they would teach the students. And some of those students, according to their competencies, would then become teachers for other students. So Lord Chaitanya had a whole group of students who were his followers. And they would sit with him, they would discuss with him, they would pose their questions to him. And they would derive a lot of understanding and sometimes frustration from the chastisements and corrections of Lord Chaitanya. However, on one occasion, Lord Chaitanya went to Gaya after the passing away of his father. And after observing the great detail and care with which Ishwarapuri served his spiritual master Madhavendrapuri, Lord Chaitanya decided that Ishwarapuri would be accepted by him as his own spiritual master. So this took place around the time of that visit to Gaya. And that for us is the point at which we understand that Lord Chaitanya began to inaugurate his Sankirtan movement. Before that he was a naughty boy and a very clever boy, running around engaged in scholarly pastimes. However, after that particular period of time, he became actually the proponent and the sustainer of the Sankirtan movement. So he came back and he was visibly transformed, especially after his initiation. And he came back and he had no interest in discussing grammar or the details of Sanskrit intricacies with the students. The students would sit with him, and whatever questions they asked, he would simply reply everything in terms of Krishna. He would somehow describe how every single word, every single grammatical construction, every consonant, every syllable, every vowel was linked to Krishna. And the students became a little confused. So they went to their teacher, Gangadas Pandit. And they said to him, "Look what's happened to your Mahaprabhu. Look what's happened to Vishwambar. He's gone off and he's come back, and We're not really sure what to think. We can't argue, we can't refute anything he tells us. But at the same time, it seems a little different to what we've heard in the past. Well, could you maybe speak to him? So Gangadas Pandit sat down with Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and explained to him that you are such a great devotee of the Lord. Surely you would achieve your mission of explaining the science of Krishna best to people if you actually deeply explain it with a very solid Shastric Sanskrit background. By understanding the intricacies of Sanskrit grammar and grammar and construction and the meanings, one can very easily pick up the meanings of the Vedic Shastras in general. So would it not be very good if you actually, in your explanations, give a very strong Shastric Vedantic basis? Lord Chaitanya would never argue with Gangadas Pandit, and in fact he was perhaps the only person who could actually understand Lord Chaitanya's explanations. All the time when Lord Chaitanya would have his arguments, discussions, most people just wouldn't even understand what Lord Chaitanya was saying. So elaborate were the explanations. But Gangadas Pandit was able to, and Lord Chaitanya had a number of confidential pastimes with him. So Gangadas Pandit gave this advice to Lord Chaitanya, and Mahaprabhu accepted it. So on the next occasion he was there with the students and they questioned him, and once again he started to answer. He tried to remember this instruction of his spiritual master, of his teacher, but unfortunately he wasn't able to stick to it. And again the different explanations of Krishna started to come out. Lord Chaitanya said to the students, "Look, I'm trying my best, but I just can't do it. I'm no longer able to discuss this dry Sanskrit grammar with you to the level of detail and satisfaction that you expect. I give you my full blessings to please find another teacher, because I can no longer continue with this." So the response of the students was interesting. They said, "Well, we don't know anyone else as our teacher, and your explanations, we cannot find any fault with them. They are so nectarian. When we hear you speak of Krishna, we can very clearly see how each and every detail of our studies is linked to Krishna. We also will give up our studies and we will join you in the Sankirtan movement." And this group of students became one of the key initial supporters of the Lord. Of course, they remained with him throughout the pastimes. But Lord Chaitanya, by his wonderful mercy, managed to attract so many people initially on the basis of his scholarship and erudite accomplishments, and then later on through devotional service, after that was brought out by his spiritual master Ishwarapuri. So that gives us a very nice description of the great importance that Gangadas Pandit played. He himself used to wonder how it is that the Supreme Lord, who is the master of Saraswati — generally, scholars, teachers, great learned persons have Mother Saraswati as their worshipable deity, or at least as a person they offer tremendous respect to in the course of their activities. And here was the Lord of Mother Saraswati coming to be his student. This was a most incredible, incredible pastime for Gangadas Pandit. And just like so many other fathers, teachers, well-wishers, brahmanas that the Lord accepts as his seniors in all his pastimes, Gangadas Pandit definitely is ranked among them, and definitely is a very, very dear and wonderful object of our worship. So, just by hearing of those activities, it is said we attain freedom from all bondage. And just by hearing of the descriptions of Damayanti and the preparations and the contents of the bag, we are supposed to cry, and tears glide down from their eyes. So I think we may need to read them a few more times. But at least, hopefully we can experience that joy, because the joy is there just waiting for us. Just a little practice, a little determination, a little patience. And then we will also be Mahaprabhu's dear leaves and twigs, engaged in distributing those fruits of love of Godhead. So I'll stop there. If there's any questions or comments...